Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Grapevine Open Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm Chris, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'll be your host for the month of February. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You can enjoy the Grapevine Open Meeting every Wednesday at noon Eastern Time on this virtual platform. The meeting will be recorded and will be posted as an audio podcast every Friday, and it'll be on all our podcast platforms and on YouTube. This is an open meeting. Everyone is welcome. We are glad you're all here, especially newcomers. If you are new to AA and want to learn more, we encourage you to find an AA group in your area. Talking to group members will help you to find a sponsor and help you to learn about the AA program of recovery from alcoholism. You can sign up for the daily quote as a daily email, or as you can get it on the Grapevine app, as I have it right here. And today's daily quote is, there is among us AAs, the ever-present need for further spiritual growth. That's a quote from AA's co-founder Bill W., July 1960. Can be found in Let's Keep It Simple, But How, which is in the book The Language of the Heart. Let's start today's reading with a reading from the big book. We're trying to not always read How It Works every week. We've read from There Is a Solution and more about alcoholism already, but today we're going to read from How It Works. How It Works, Chapter 5. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at a turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve, sorry, to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we've set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas: A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, and B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, and C, that God could and would if he were sought. Okay. This will be a two-speaker meeting. There will be no sharing from attendees, so please sit back, relax, and listen. I love open meetings because there's no pressure, except on Matt and Becca today. We often hear it's best to try to identify with the speakers rather than compare your story with theirs. I met Becca. She was doing service for the area in Missouri, and we became friends, quick friends, and I'd like to introduce Becca.
Hi, I'm Becca. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April 22nd, 2012, and my home group is Progress Not Perfection Group in O'Fallon, Missouri. And we have a really great format that we love. We do the first week is the step of the month, the second week is the tradition of the month, the third week is a big book story, and the fourth is a speaker. And we offer a resentment chip that when you take one, you have to bring it back and tell us how you solved your resentment or dealt with it. And it's actually that has become probably the most fun part of our meeting because we do it at the end and everybody says liars when nobody takes one. So we're having fun and we love the literature. And I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous. It saved my life. I was an extremely low bottom drunk, and I barely made it here in one piece. And thank God I did because I'm here today. I really firmly believe that I was born an alcoholic. I really didn't stand a chance. There's a long line of alcoholics on both sides of my family. Multiple people have drank themselves to death in my family. I guess it's a common problem. So, and according to my mom, I was drinking in diapers. I always like to go around the room and drink out of everybody's cup and whatever. So I knew that it was something good right off the bat, I guess. I had a really, really bad childhood, and I've never thought that that had anything to do with my alcoholism. I'm an alcoholic, and that's just the bottom line. But my home life was horrible, and I was also teased at school, all the things. I obviously didn't fit in anywhere. I ended up befriending a girl down the street, and she asked me one day to hold, I was like 12 at this time. She asked me to hold these bottles of alcohol for her. And I was like, oh, sure. And I drank like a sip of peppermint schnapps and put it all away where I thought I had hid it very well. But my mom found it, of course. And I got hauled off to 30-day treatment before I even began my drinking career. So, needless to say, I met some really interesting people in there. And one of them was this boy. And he called me when I got out. And he invited me to meet him. And so I thought it was a date. Well, it was a meeting of Crossroads, which was a young people's AA version of AA for young people. And they were really nice to me. They wanted me to come back. And so I did. And I got into this program. And like I said, I had not begun my drinking career. However, they ended up helping me deal with things that were happening in my home. And then eventually they sent me to a hospital. They said, I think that's how they made money. They said I needed treatment or whatever. But that saved my life at that time because it got me out of that home. They got child protective services involved and I had to come back and live with another family, but I also got a lot of much needed therapy and all the things. So I still ended up being crazy and a drunk, but that's okay. So anyway, I eventually followed some guy to Texas when I was 17, and that's when I started drinking. And I started drinking alcoholically out of the gate, drank until I threw up, couldn't wait to do it again, the whole nine yards. So then eventually I ended up back in St. Louis, and I drank some, I don't remember if I was drinking every day, but I was always down for partying. And eventually I started getting into the club scene and work. Then I was working in a club and it's like everything was one big, huge party. And somewhere in my early 20s, at this point, I had gotten like a more normal job. And I started drinking in the morning to take the edge off because I had drank probably 30, 40 beers the night before, whatever. So that was pretty early on that I started doing that. And then eventually at one point I started getting the shakes, but I convinced myself that it was all these other things other than drinking. I didn't think it had anything to do with drinking. Or that I just didn't drink the right things the night before. I don't know. All these stupid things came in my head that didn't even make sense because we try to make all these excuses. So, eventually I found myself in this really abusive relationship and that, believe it or not, I was already drinking most of the day. And, but that amped up my drinking even more. And at some point, I also realized that vodka took the shakes away faster than anything else. And so drinking mostly just beer went to mostly just vodka, which started causing more and more problems for me. I don't know how I survived that relationship. I was almost killed, but I survived somehow. And I ended up, though, and during that time, my drinking got so bad that I could not hold a job. I couldn't do anything. All I did was drink. And I remember thinking about God, and I believed in God, but I just didn't believe that he was supposed to help me. So I but I do, like, after the years of sobriety kind of cleared my head, I do remember trying to ask God for help. And so my mom had remarried this guy at some point who is in AA. He's actually, I'm so grateful for him now, but of course I hated him back then because he didn't allow my mom to enable me the way I thought she was supposed to enable me. So, regardless, I had some hospital stays for along the way for my alcoholism, but at some point I actually started having pancreatitis. And so I was in and out of the hospital because as soon as I would leave, I would start drinking again. Started racking up some pretty long intensive care stays. And one of those times, my stepdad came to pick me up and take me to a meeting. So we went to a meeting, and I don't remember a whole lot about the meeting itself. I just remember like looking across from me and there was this guy shaking uncontrollably and drinking coffee. And I'm like, why does he keep drinking all this coffee? He's like, not, why won't he stop shaking? I was just like, what is going on? I don't know. I was hyper fixated on that, probably because I was shaking too. I don't know. But regardless, I got like my newcomer's packet and I went to the meetings like I was supposed to. And my mom and my stepdad, they gave me my sponsor, like they assigned my sponsor to me. And I met with her and I listened to what she had to say and I acted like I understood. And I started to figure out how to say the right words in a meeting, I guess nobody would really bother me. But I got there when the meeting started. I left when the meeting was over and that was that. And I didn't drink, but I also didn't ask if it was okay to take someone else's prescription. So, but anyway, mindless, regardless of that, I was not 100% sober, but I was not drinking. So, of course, I never used the phone list. I didn't do any of the things. And so, what eventually, of course, I drank, but I had made a decision to drink. And I was going to break my supposed sobriety by drinking a beer during the baseball game because the Cardinals, it was 2011. And they were going to the World Series. It was really exciting. And so I don't remember even drinking the beer, but what I do remember is before I could drink the beer, I had to go to Schnucks and buy a gallon of vodka, start drinking the vodka to have the courage to drink the beer that was breaking my supposed sobriety. And yeah, that made perfect sense to me in that moment. And I remember drinking the vodka and I don't remember anything else except for 2 days later, my mom had called a wellness check on me and I was woken up by EMTs and carted off to the hospital. And so when I got like a little bit through being there, I was in the ER. I realized they had locked all the doors and they were kind enough to tell me that I wasn't going home. I was going next door to the behavioral health center. So, I did not want to be there. By this time it was evening time. I'm like, I just need a drink. And I'm pretty sure the doctor there that I had to talk to the next day was crazier than most of the patients because he actually let me go. I convinced him that everybody lied, that I had not tried to hurt myself, which I don't remember doing anything. So I had no idea. So I guess it was true in my mind. But that morning before that happened, there was an AA meeting that these women brought in. And I sat there and all I could think was how much I wanted to drink and that AA wasn't going to work for me. It wasn't what I needed. I had to get out of there and I had to drink. So I went back out and ran around for 6 months, got in trouble with the law, which wasn't my first time, so it wasn't a good thing. And that did not stop me. I had been in the hospital again. I had seizures, pancreatitis, a whole long list of things that I was pretty close to death. And that abusive relationship I was still in, and he actually kicked me out. And I was like, whoa, this guy? So I ended up living in my car, but it wasn't that bad because I could drink the way I wanted to drink. And eventually I found myself passed out in my car in a friend's driveway, and she pulled me out of the car and took me inside. And to, well, she's no longer here, but she said to that she never wanted to have anything to do with me or to help me, but something told her that she had to help me. And as soon as I could actually make it to a meeting and drive or even stand without falling over because I was shaking so badly. I went to a meeting and there were two women there and they started crying and they were like, oh my God, we are so glad you're here. We've prayed for you that you were going to make it back ever since you left. And so I'm crying, they're crying, and they gave me a woman's phone number. And then they were like, this woman would probably be a really good sponsor for you. Just give her a call and see what you think. So I did call her. I met her at a meeting that night. She did become my sponsor and she took me through the steps and the book, and she was very patient with me. I drove this woman absolutely insane. I was 35 years old. I didn't know how to do anything for myself. I didn't know how to be an adult, how to function, talk to people. I was just a mess. And I probably called her constantly. Actually, when I had a year, she had another sponsee that had a year at the same time. We had the same sobriety date. And when she gave her coin, she was like, oh my gosh, this has been a breeze. You're so great. And then when it was my turn, she's like, you have driven me absolutely insane. I'm like, well, at least she was honest. But it's crazy because the things that she taught me in that first year of my sobriety, I find myself repeating more and more to my sponsees more than anything. I've had other sponsors since her, but she taught me that foundation that I needed, and she had that patience with me. And every time I see her now, it's just a gift because she laughs and remembers the things that I used to say and do. And I'm like, oh my God. But in that first year, I went to like 15 meetings a week. I was afraid to sit down and not be doing anything. I thought I would drink. And so I just did the things that I was told to do, and which I know most of us don't do, but I did because I knew that this was my only chance to live. So I actually took the suggestions. I did the things. And one of the meetings that I got started going to was a step study. And in that group, we were a really small group. And everybody was so open and so honest. And that in that group, we did a step a week. It was like pretty fast moving. And I realized in that group, because everybody was so honest, that there was not one thing about my story that was unique. There wasn't anything about me that was unique. I was just a drunk like they were. I learned so much in that group. And that was actually my first introduction to the traditions and the concepts, just that they exist. I couldn't understand any of it at the time, but and eventually I started sponsoring other women and just growing in this program and doing all the things. And at one point I met my now husband, and we met at a banquet that we now go to every year. But he is an amazing person, and it's really awesome to be able to walk this journey with him. But our first date, we were meeting for coffee, which turned into lunch, and he was like, "Well, I just want to be super honest about everything and start things off the right way." And he said a couple things, and he asked me how old I was, because I guess he thought I was much younger than I was, and very nice. And then he was like, "Well, by the way, I might be going to prison." And I was like, "Oh, me too." And so luckily, by the grace of God, neither one of us went to prison. Thank you, God. But I did have to do a lot of things, and we both did. We went through all of the stuff that we had to do, but we managed to stay out of prison, and we've just had a really wonderful life. And I was never able to have children, but he has two beautiful stepdaughters that I just love so much, and I have two little dogs that act like little toddlers, so that counts. But I love this program, and I'm so grateful that it saved my life, and I wanted to give back what was freely given to me. And so I started raising my hand for service and doing the things that I could do to give back. And I feel like I'll never be able to repay Alcoholics Anonymous for what it gave me. I just am so insanely grateful. And I learned so many things every time I go through everything with another woman, or even just get a phone call and talk to somebody about what's going on with them, and try to be of some type of help. But yeah, I love service. I love all of our literature. I especially AA Comes of Age. If you're from St. Louis, you would know it's like all about the 1955 convention in St. Louis, which is so exciting. And by the way, the International's here in 2030, but I'm excited for that. But I never imagined that I would have a life like this, nor that I would even be alive. Like I said, it was a major struggle for me. I had to go to places that I didn't think I would ever go before I was willing to get sober and to be here and be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm probably at that time, I'm assuming. So that's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Becca. It's great to hear you. Wow. I can identify with the starting off right away with the blackouts and the throwing up and all that. I was in the same place, you know. It just from the very beginning, I couldn't get enough, and I just made myself sick so much. Terrible. But yeah, looking forward to that convention. Wow. Okay, so I have a few announcements. The seventh tradition of AA states that every group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA members can help by contributing to your group, your local office, your area and district, and to the General Service Board. There's a great pamphlet that's called Self-Support, Where Money and Spirituality Mix, and you can find it on AA.org. Grapevine does not accept contributions directly, but of course we do have expenses. The best way to support Grapevine is to subscribe to the magazine, either in print, online, or on the apps. You can subscribe to the magazine in print or online by visiting aagrapevine.org, and you can subscribe to the app by searching for AA Grapevine on the App Store on your phone. You can also purchase Grapevine books, greeting cards, and other items at your local AA office. By doing that, you will be supporting both Grapevine and your local office. You can also visit the Grapevine online store at aagrapevine.org. The AA Grapevine Carry the Message Project allows you to help us help others by providing magazine subscriptions to those who are incarcerated, hospitalized, living in remote areas, or stuck at home. Visit aagrapevine.org and click on the Carry the Message to learn more. We invite you to listen to our other weekly podcast, the AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour, which is available for free on all podcast platforms and on grapevine.org. And there's a new episode every Monday. Please also follow Grapevine on Instagram and YouTube. Matt and I have known each other for probably 12 years, 15 years, somewhere in there. We met because we both are Wharf Rats, that is sober Grateful Dead fans. And he was very kind to me and my son back in 2015. We went out to see a concert and Matt put us up for a few days. It was very great. So here's Matt.
Thanks, Chris. Hi, everybody. My name is Matt. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 10th, 1998. My home group is the Daily Reprieve group that meets Wednesday nights in Dyer, Indiana, 7 p.m. It's been a new meeting that we started. My wife and I started, and it's been a joy to get that off the ground. So first, I want to say, Becca, amazing story. Really appreciate your share. I got a lot out of it. Thank you. Thank you. We have a lot in common, kind of funny. And Chris, thanks for asking me to speak. Always good to reconnect with you. You know, for me, I got sober when I was 22 years old. You know, I was a never could do anything type of drunk. You know, I crashed and burned right after turning 21, flunked out of college, had absolutely nowhere to go. And somehow, you know, the hand of AA reached out and or I reached out, one or the other. And, you know, some miracles took place that I can't explain. So super grateful to be here sober. I walked into these doors in April of 1995 the first time, just for, you know, I just wanted to say that and get that out of the way. So I've been substance free since September 10th of 1998. So alcohol is my number one thing, but so are a lot of other substances too. So it's, I got to be cognizant and have that daily connection every day. So having said that, you know, I'm the youngest of three boys. My parents relocated from the DC area to Northern Michigan when I was an infant, when they started their family. Our three boys, the three of us were born in Northern Michigan. And in the early 70s, my parents decided to relocate to the Orlando area. So I grew up in Orlando, Florida. I was a product of the 80s. So I had graduated in 1991. My brothers graduated in like 83 and 87. It was kind of the wild. It was kind of wild back then. Being a Gen X kid, I was a latchkey kid. Both parents worked and I had access to a lot of alcohol and drugs at a very early age that I, you know, that I don't necessarily see in today's youth, thank goodness. So, you know, my house growing up, you know, my dad had a very rough childhood. He was put in an orphanage because his mom couldn't take care of him. His father, my grandfather, was not around. It's a miracle that my dad was able to do what he's done in his life, considering his upbringing. And I know him and my mother did the very best they could to raise us. And, you know, there was, you know, we went to our particular faith every Sunday, but I got to say, there wasn't one time where I ever thought that my higher power, back then pre AA, that would be anything that I would ever need to or want to rely upon to solve my problems or give me any relief. I just find that kind of ironic that, you know, I was given a lot of tools from a spiritual religious perspective and never had any inclination, to go that route. I did a lot of crazy behaviors in my teenage years, a lot of drinking and driving. I partook in a lot of other substances along with alcohol that I truly believe today helped me get to a bottom faster. I wouldn't recommend any of that to, any of my kids or my friends' kids, but that's probably another story and another fellowship that I sometimes partake in. So lots of relationship issues started to come up with me and my drinking in my high school years. I was an athlete and wanted to pursue athletics in a tacit kind of way. I think I really wanted to escape the geography that I was currently in. I wanted to escape probably me. And so I ended up going to college in the Midwest. And not only did my problems not go away, when I got to the college campus, it a whole new world opened up to me, where there was just unfettered access to alcohol and other substances. And I, there was never any governor on how much I did or how much, it was nonstop. And it was like that way for 2 or 3 years. And again, a lot of my and I had relationship issues with, just getting along with people, whether it was a girlfriend or fellow folks, either in the dormitory or roommates that I had along the years. I was always running into issues, and I was always not the one that was at fault either. And and that was a common theme. I could never take responsibility for my actions. And finally, through a lot of pain, finally my university told me to take a break. I got a forced break in my, I think, end of my second year in the school. I certainly wasn't a sophomore, but I had skated by enough for them to take my mom's and dad's hard-earned money for tuition to accept the tuition money. But they finally had had enough. And I think I probably lasted a few more months hanging around a college campus, living around campus, not going to school. And that's a recipe for disaster for a active alcoholic in the throes of his addiction. I had time. I scraped money together. I did whatever I could to just obliterate myself and forget about everything that was going on at that particular moment. And at some point, I think I had went from college, college campus to working, like a third shift job in a factory, like rebuilding alternator parts. And I thought, wow, this is a distinct difference from, this isn't how it was supposed to go. I started to have those thoughts, and invariably, it got worse and worse, around April of 95. And being a, early 20s kid, I thought getting a puppy would be a smart idea. So I got a puppy. And again, I was working third shift, and I would come home from the job at 7 or 8 in the morning, try to go to sleep, and this puppy would be nipping at my heels. And that went on for 2, 3, 4, 5 days in a row. And soon there was some sort of, I don't know, you call it psychosis, you can call it, I call it incomprehensible demoralization is what I call it. I call it gumming to, both candles had completely burnt both ends. And there was just a it was like lighting a fuse of insanity that had occurred at this moment in time. Bill Wilson talks about it a little bit in the Big Book. I'm not saying I had the same white light experience that he had. But I had something that happened, and I knew that there was no turning back, and that I needed to do something. But fear has a funny way of like paralyzing me from making any action or doing anything. And that was certainly the case. So at some point, I really wanted to end it all, but I was too chicken to end my life, thank God. And I had reached out to, at the time, There were, I lived in East Central Indiana near a college campus, and at the time they had mental health services that were provided, that were a, were provided for the, for society, for the local city. And they worked on a sliding scale, because they didn't have a job, I didn't have any money. So I think I had to pay like $10, $10, I think. I had to pay 10% of whatever the fee was. And I think it ended up being like $10. And I went to my first intake evaluation, and I met this lady who was a sweet Al-Anon lady, and she was an angel. She's one of my angels, that you kind of run into in life. And she gave me the questionnaire, the dreaded questionnaire that we get. And typically, my normal self would have never answered those questions honestly, because I never would have thought I had a problem. But having had this sort of spiritual upheaval, or this, I'd call it incomprehensible demoralization, I had had enough pain, that I answered the questionnaires honestly. How much did you do? What did you do? How often did you do it? Where did you do it? How did you get it? I answered all those questions as honestly as I could. And then she looked at me and said, "Matt, you're an alcoholic." And I didn't protest. I didn't, it was like the first moment where I could honestly see myself as I truly was. And that was, it was a comforting thing at the same time. It was a very, very, painful thing to feel. And I thought to myself, wow. So what did I do from there after that first appointment? She recommended that she highly suggested that I go to an AA meeting. She highly suggested that I join the outpatient program that they offered. I did both. I don't recall if that meeting was the same day, but in the facility, they had a open speaker meeting on, and I remember it was a Thursday night. And I went to that meeting, and it was a speaker meeting, much like we have here today. And we went, and I didn't understand format. I didn't understand etiquette or protocol with AA. And so I went to the meeting, and who later, John was his name. He was the chairperson, and he had a friend named Bruce C, who I believe was the area delegate for, I think, Area 22 or 23. Great guy. Anyway, I had disrupted the meeting. During the meeting, I think I spoke out of turn, and instead of politely telling me, "Hey, you need to be quiet," it was they told me to shut up in front of like 70, probably 50 people. And that hurt me, being super sensitive. I'm super sensitive today, but and then I was clearly raw, and that hurt. That hurt. But I learned protocol in AA meetings, the very first AA meeting I went to. I don't recommend treating anyone that way today, but it certainly helped me. And those two later became very dear friends. And so, that was my, 22 years old. Fast forwarding here, I don't want to talk too long here. I was able to rebuild my life, and through Bruce's connection, I met my first sponsor, Phil J, who sadly passed away at age 82 this summer. He was an amazing man. My daughter, I got sober on a college campus. There was an Al-Anon club on Fraternity Row, ironically enough, and I got sober in that house, in that AA meeting, which is, an old house. And many years later, my oldest daughter attend. She still attends the same university, and I have been able to reconnect in that old meeting space and see. And I got to see my old sponsor maybe 10 times before he passed away last summer, after not having a connection for over 20 years. So, just a miracle, just an example of a miracle. The program. He was the first guy that really walked me through the steps. He showed me, he showed me where self-reliance failed me. He showed me where my attitude, I invariably put myself in a position to be hurt almost always. Resentments, fear, anger, those usually were always the result of my doing. And that was a revelation for me. That was a new way of thinking. That was a new way to think about how I approach life. And somehow through that process of working the steps with him, the desire to drink was removed. I didn't have that euphoric recall. I didn't have that urge in the back of my throat that was uncontrollable. I was able to arrest the disease of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's described so eloquently in the Doctor's Opinion and in other areas all over the big book. And that's just so amazing. Briefly, during those years too, I had hurt my back working at a moving company. And I'd taken opiates for a number of months there in the 97, 90 summer, 97, 98 range. And for the grace of God, somehow I had friends, sponsors really kind of reel me back in from that terrible episode of a relapse. And so I started over in September 10th in 1998. And so I just want to say that for anyone that's struggling with anything, I mentioned the incomprehensible demoralization. I touched base a little bit about maybe the spiritual experiences that we often see in AA. That's, in the appendix two of the big book. There's two ways. Like Dr. Bob went through the educational variety of banging his head up against the wall through relapse, or he didn't just get this white light experience. He grinded it out through working the steps. And eventually he felt that spiritual experience. With me, maybe I had this little white light thing that happened in April of 95, but it doesn't last. It doesn't last. You have to do certain things every day to arrest the disease of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I named the group the Daily Reprieve, that the meeting that we started. That was the name of my home group in the mid 90s when I got sober in Muncie, Indiana. So, fast forward, I graduated college through AA. I met my wife who, she was in Alcoholics Anonymous. We met when she was about 60 days sober. We always kind of kid around. This falls under the rule of 62 category, everybody. We always kid around that I may or may not have had my shark fin up. But she, we did a lot of the same things that I heard earlier. We courted each other and in a respectful manner that was healthy, through sponsors, and, we each work our own steps. She's been sober many years. I've been sober many years. We have four lovely children. I've been able to garner, employment to feed my family, all these things that are really all responsible for Alcoholics Anonymous. Life has its challenges, as we all know. And I love coming to AA on a daily basis is that I get to share my experiences with fellow members of AA, and I get to hear their triumphs and their tribulations, because I have triumphs and tribulations just like every garden variety drunk that walks in the doors. And I love being able to share my life with them because they help me. Financially it's been up and down thing. The crash of 2007, 2008 was very painful for us to go through. We made it through the other side. My wife's had extreme health challenges over the last 10 years, and she's battled through like a champ. We have four wonderful kids. We get to see them partake in maybe possible same behaviors that we took in our early years. And so that takes another that requires additional level of recovery from my perspective on how to manage that, the lack of power, right. Powerless over, people, places and things, even my children. I had a child break her leg and got a phone call at 3 a.m, on college campus. And that was a terrible phone call to receive. I thought she killed somebody in a car. Thank God she had, only had broken her femur and, in a pedestrian walking, running accident. So, those are new, things for me to experience. But I try to share those with others. And I pray, my kids have their own higher power, their own pathway. I am not their higher, but I'm not the go-between. I'm not the intermediary. I've got enough on my plate. I've got enough character, flaws that I got to manage on my side of the street. So I love my kids dearly, and I pray that and I know that they'll be fine. Either way, they'll be fine. So today, today we live in Northwest Indiana. This is the longest place we've lived. We've been in Chicagoland since 08, and we lived here specifically since 2013. And it's been, bloom where you're planted. We spent time in Arizona, in Indianapolis, where I got sober. And this is the longest place we've been, and we don't have any plans on leaving. We're looking forward to St. Louis very much. And we're looking forward, for me specifically, I got sober in Indianapolis. The 100th anniversary of AA, I believe, is going to be the international convention in 10 years. And I'm really looking forward to those two events, and to meet all you fine people and many more. So, Chris, thank you. Thank you very much. Becca, loved your story. And I'm going to turn it back over to Chris. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. I didn't do this on purpose, having the two next conventions represented, but it's cool. I could identify, Matt, just the getting to the faster bottom with dry goods that happened with me too. And I too tried to obliterate myself so I wouldn't have to face anything or feel anything or be around anybody. And I did have a white light experience 36 years ago, and I thought there would be some sort of a graduation process in AA that someday I would like be fine and I wouldn't, everything would be good, and that never happened. But what I did learn was that, like you said, the white light experience or the spiritual experience, happens, but it doesn't always last. And the daily practices that I learned in the first 90 days of, saying a prayer in the morning and asking for a daily reprieve and going to a meeting and talking to another person, calling somebody, reading the literature on a daily basis, and at night saying a prayer of gratitude for another day sober, those things, continue to keep me sober. And if I drift away, which happens, I don't end up in a good place, and I have to redouble my efforts. So thank you both very much. Great stories, great messages. And please, everybody that's on here, let your friends know about our meeting. If you are on a committee, like a CPC committee or a PI committee, this is an open meeting, so if professionals or students want to learn about AA, this might be a good place for them to come. It's open meeting for anybody who wants to learn about AA. So we can close now, and I'll just invite Becca to close with the prayer of her choice.
So in my home group, we close with the responsibility pledge.
Okay.
I am responsible
Responsible
when
when
anyone,
anyone,
anywhere
anywhere reaches
reaches
out for
out to
help.
talk.
I
I
want
want
the hand of AA always to be there.
that and for
For
that.
that, I am responsible. Thanks very much, everybody. Good to see you both, and thank you all for who attended. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Chris.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank